I'm Marty Moscoe. Welcome to Radio Times. Michael Smirkanish made news in the world of talk radio a few years ago when he broke with his Republican Party and supported then-candidate Barack Obama for president. He made some news earlier this year when he announced he was leaving his syndicated terrestrial talk radio show to go to Sirius XM. On Monday, he'll be hosting his new show on the POTUS channel, where he believes he can do his brand of non-ideological talk programming. He says he left commercial talk radio because it caters to an audience that has become, quote, too white, too old, too male, and too angry. He will continue his column for the Philadelphia Inquirer and his work at MSNBC. And Michael Smirkanish, nice to have you with us.
Thank
on
you for
Radio
having
Times.
Me.
So you want a young, female, happy audience of color. Is that what you're looking for?
You know, Marty, I said that to someone earlier in the week who responded, wait a minute, you're most of those things.
Are you that angry, though?
I'm not angry. And I didn't have a response for that. I was caught flat-footed.
So what kind of audience, I mean, how do you imagine then this future audience of yours?
Well, the frustration that I have is that the AM band and terrestrial talk, I have to still get used to saying that, shows no desire to want to evolve. I mean, the tent needs to grow or that's going to die, I'm convinced. I was invited to deliver a keynote address to the National Association of Broadcasters Convention in Chicago 2 years ago, went to Chicago, 500 program directors in the room. And I said many of these same things. We're catering to the same small, albeit loyal audience who are out of the mainstream. And why are we not trying to sell widgets to everybody? And when the speech ended, I got a lot of winks and nods and attaboys from program directors who see that it needs to change, but little resolve to actually do it.
But do you think that you changed over the years that you were hosting your talk show, or do you think the audience changed, or the audience kind of gelled?
I think that the audience narrowed and I evolved. There's no question that my politics today are not lockstep with where they are when I came of age, which was by now more than three decades ago when I first got involved in Republican politics. And as you made reference to in my introduction, it's true. For 30 years, I voted only for Republican presidential candidates, not for only Republican candidates, but at the top of the ticket, that is the way that I voted, and then I broke in 2008.
Well, in fact, I was reading some of the columns that you wrote for the Philadelphia Inquirer about your evolution. It seemed like it began in the primary in Pennsylvania in 2008, where you said, I prefer Barack Obama over to Hillary Clinton. Was there kind of a turning point for you or an aha moment for you?
There were a series of aha moments, and they preceded 08. And actually, they arose out of the concern that I had for the way in which the Bush administration was fighting or not fighting the war on terror. The events of September 11 affected me in a very profound way, even though no member of my family or social circle was lost on that day. And initially, I bought into the rah-rah of we've got to fight them over there so that we don't have to fight them here. But I became fixated on the hunt for bin Laden and what the administration was or was not doing about that. And I was convinced that Iraq was a diverture that it should never have taken place, and we never should have gone into Afghanistan in the way that we did. And if you went back and looked at those Inquirer columns, you'd find about a dozen of them where I said, you know, it occurs to me Pakistan is the hot spot and probably where he is. It's the one area where I look like a soothsayer. And the Bush administration actually flew me to the Middle East. I played military tourist for a week, I think, to address some of the concerns that I had expressed, and I came home convinced they've taken their eye off the ball. Obama, as a candidate, said all the right things, as far as I was concerned, for which he was ridiculed by Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton. So it was largely foreign policy and terrorism that led to my decision, and in the end, he did exactly what he told me he would do in a series of interviews.
And in fact, you have interviewed him, what, seven or eight times over the years, perhaps? I don't know if you're the person who has interviewed him most, but he seems to really like to talk to you. Why do you think that is?
We've had good dialogue. You know, there's a segment of my audience that unless I walk into the Oval Office and knee him in the groin, they're not going to be satisfied, okay? I'm not catering to them when I'm in his company. I'm trying to ask intelligent questions and give him the opportunity to respond, always with dignity and respect for the office. That's what I've done. I haven't shied away from asking about whatever was hot at that time, and we've always left with a hand handshake and a feeling that each of us got to do what we wanted to do. Me to ask probing questions and him the opportunity to answer them.
This goes back a couple of years, but you talked about John McCain being an honorable man. This was when you said, I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. But you seem to raise questions about Sarah Palin. And I wonder whether you think whether the selection of Sarah Palin became the kind of spark that created the angry part of the Tea Party, the people that like Donald Trump and are birthers. Do you see that growing out of the McCain campaign of a couple of years ago?
I think it's been festering within the party for a long, long time. There's been an exodus of individuals like myself from the GOP who've become independents. And, you know, independents are the largest growing demographic, not R's and not D's. And I think that a lot of the social conservatism within the GOP has been a turnoff. I also think that there's been a dumbing down of the party. And you take a look at what went on, Marty, in those debates in the 2012 cycle, and a couple of things stand out in my mind, not the least of which is the question that was asked, would you reject a 10-for-1 deal, meaning $10 of spending cuts for every $1 of tax increase? Every hand went up in the air, even John Huntsman. I was terribly disappointed in him in the time. That's what the party has become. And it's very frustrating, and the demographics are not on the side of the GOP, and they need to change.
So it's interesting, because what you're describing is some parallels between that part of the Republican Party and talk radio, commercial talk radio, the AM talk radio.
Oh, I'm saying something even further. I'm saying that there's a causal connection between polarization that exists in Washington, D.C. today and the polarized media. I'm writing about this Sunday in the Inquirer, reflecting on the change that I've seen in the last 23 years, because that's when I got started in talk radio. When I began at WWDB, 50,000-watt, you know, flamethrower on the FM band.
That.
Well, think about the personalities. Irv Homer was a libertarian before I'd ever heard of Ron Paul. Frank Ford was an unabashed liberal married to D.A. Lynn Abraham. Dominic Quinn was a conservative, but I thought of Dominic for his command of the English language. But the fella that I remember the most, because I used to guest host for him from 10 to 1, Bernie Herman.
Sure.
Do you remember his brand, his moniker? We didn't even know what a brand was at the time. The gentleman of broadcasting. Marty, how far are you getting if you walk into a terrestrial radio station today and you say to the program director, I'm here and I am the gentleman of broadcasting? You'll be shown the door. But the point is that personality mattered, not ideology. And as that industry has grown polarized, so has Washington in the exact same time period. And I think that too many elected officials are taking their cues from people with microphones.
But does that mean you don't like your audience? I mean, you're saying goodbye to your audience today, but that you have learned or have grown not to like them?
No, I love everybody who's ever listened to me, and I wish there were more of them. But I think that what we need to do is recognize that there are consequences when people make their entertainment choices. It's ironic to me that never before have we had so much choice in terms of where we get our news and information, and yet some continue to go only to limited sources where, frankly, it's a very insular group. There are a whole host of people among us who Wednesday morning were like a truck hit them when Romney lost to Obama because they were relying only on talk, only on Drudge, and only on Fox, and they were oblivious to the fact that there are a lot of other folks in this country.
And living in an alternate universe.
Correct.
So why, or how do you think then satellite will offer you a kind of universe that you're looking for?
I'm proud of the success that I've had up until now. I looked at the future and I decided this is not the environment, A, where I'm comfortable in working, B, where I have the greatest growth potential. And I say that because I at its high point, within the last 60 days, I was on 80 stations across the country. If you were to tune into any one of those 80 stations, you were going to find the likes of Limbaugh, Beck, and Hannity or their imitators. Look, they're great entertainers. They're very fine radio personalities. But it's awfully hard for me to distinguish myself if I'm trying to be independent in my thought process, surrounded by only that. I mean, truly kicking the crap out of the president for 9 straight hours. And here's the key part, whether he deserves it or not.
You want to do something that you described as non-ideological brand of talk. And I think the trick is, how do you find that audience?
Well, I think that audience,
whether the audience is already there waiting for you to arrive, in satellite radio or how you go find them?
The audience exists. That audience is the largest demographic in the country. You know, more are self-describing as moderate and independent than any other label that's out there. So they are out there. I don't think that they've had an opportunity to go to vehicles where they can find an unbiased presentation of the news. And I'm hoping to fill the void that I think is out there. No bench has been cultivated by any of these media outlets either. So if you were to say to me, well, who is doing the sort of thing that you envision yourself doing, I'm going to be hard-pressed to answer that question.
What's going to be the name of your show on POTUS?
The Michael Smirkanish Program. It's already a mouthful. You know, there's not much I can do with it.
How do you spell Smirkanish, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's interesting you say the Michael Smirkanish Program. You like the word program as opposed to show?
I've tried to think what's the difference between the two, because very recently they came to me and said, we need a new logo. And I had to confront that question.
Right.
I still don't know what's the difference between the two. They wanted to just make it Smirkanish, and that would have been fine with me as well.
But program seems a little more highfalutin, don't you think, than show, like showbiz show?
Which do you think better suits me?
I like Smirkanish, frankly.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'll change it. I have time. 48 hours.
Well, I was going to say, and we were talking, I should say to our listeners, talking before going on the air, and I asked Michael, so what are you going to do on Monday? You're not quite, at least you're telling me, you're not quite sure yet. You must have something rattling around.
Well, I can go one of two ways. I can just walk in and it's business as usual and deliver a broadcast, which frankly would be easier for me and what I'd like to do. I think there's an expectation that you better say something, almost like a State of the Union address at the outset. But I've been at transitional moments before. That presupposes that your audience is assembled in some mythical auditorium and they're waiting with bated breath to hear what you've got to say. And what are you kidding me? They're driving kids to school. They're getting breakfast made. They're off to work. They're leading their lives.
Well, and in many ways, radio can be, and sometimes TV is just wallpaper. I mean, it's on, but people aren't necessarily paying attention to it. They go in and out of paying attention to it.
I affectionately say to Sid Mark that he has provided the background for my life. And I think that's an important function that we provide. Even when people are not fully engaged, you're with them.
You substitute and are an analyst for MSNBC. Do you prefer radio to TV, or do you care? I mean, I realize that each of them offers something different.
I'm more comfortable on radio, perhaps because I've been doing it for far longer. I like the platform afforded by TV. I like the opportunity of reaching more people in a shorter time period. And it's a great privilege for me to guest host for Chris on Hardball, especially with the regularity that I do it. But I don't fully get to put my imprint on that program because I'm also doing a radio show. And by the time I walk into that studio, it's largely been blocked out. So the only true portion of the program that's me is a commentary that I both write and deliver at the end.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation talking with Michael Smirkanish, and of course a very familiar voice here in the Delaware Valley and frankly across the country. He's had a syndicated terrestrial talk radio show for a number of years now, and he is making the move to Sirius XM. In fact, on Monday, he'll be hosting his new show on the POTUS channel. Questions or comments, give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, LD Entertainment, presenting the thriller Disconnect, a film about ordinary people struggling to connect in today's wired world, starring Jason Bateman and Alexander Skarsgård, now playing at Landmark Ritz at the Bourse and Rave Ritz Center.
Supporting WHYY, Opera Philadelphia, presenting Mozart's masterpiece, The Magic Flute, from April 19th through 28th at the Academy of Music. When the Queen of the Night's daughter is kidnapped by an evil sorcerer, it's up to the heroic Prince Tamino to save her. Mozart's The Magic Flute is a tale of unpredictable, death-defying adventures to ultimately triumph in wisdom and true love. Tickets and information at operafilla.org or by phone at 215-893-1018.
Just you wait. WHYY's program about popular culture brings you stories about our changing world, like trying to stop teenagers from ruining their digital lives, practical tips to ready yourself for the end of days, and how we sent one of our reporters to space camp and it nearly killed him. Okay, he just blacked out a little. Still, pretty cool. Those stories and more, Just you wait.
Tomorrow at noon on WHYY.
PICO supports WHYY. The PICO Smart Business e-Audit is an online tool that analyzes and estimates business energy usage and provides customized recommendations to help manage energy consumption. Find more at pico.com/smartideas.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. And in this hour, two media people who are changing careers in about 20 minutes. I'll be talking with Bill Adair, the founder and editor of PolitiFact. He's leaving his job to work at Duke University. With us here in our Philadelphia studios, Michael Smirkanish, making the switch from terrestrial radio to satellite radio. He'll be hosting a morning show on the POTUS channel starting on Monday, I guess competing with us here on Radio Times a bit. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I was doing some research on you, and Larry David is your idol. In fact, there's a picture of him, or there was a picture of him over your desk.
There is. We just moved into a new studio, and that was the first thing that I hung. Because I think that David understands. Do you remember season four when Jerry and George are at Monk's Cafe? They want to pitch a show to NBC, a TV show. Yes. What's it going to be about? Nothing. Well, those nothings have resonance for everyone. And although I like to talk about the front page news, as you like to talk about the front page news, if I can identify that one aspect that is really integral to people's lives but might not strike you as a conventional talk radio subject, I really enjoy those.
And do you like his HBO show? I mean, in part, it's so uncomfortable because
I love it.
He's such an idiot.
I love that show. And people have said to me, Marty, well, who's your radio inspiration? And
yes.
I think they expect me to say Paul Harvey or some such thing. You know, Now you know the rest. And I always say it's Larry David because There was genius in Seinfeld.
Have you ever interviewed him?
Never.
And have you asked?
Oh, my gosh. Have
on
we
bended
asked?
Knee?
On bended knee. He's the one that's gotten away.
Oh, really? Well, and going back to Obama, having interviewed him so many times, is there a danger of being sort of knowing your guest too well, especially if they're an elected official? And I always find that interviewing elected officials is not always the most enjoyable kind of interview.
Well, it's a hard interview to do because it's very difficult to walk into that office, which I've had the privilege of doing. I've watched how some others have handled it, and I think that they've been less than respectful to the occupant, regardless of who the occupant is. I can't do that. There's no way I'm walking in there and I'm going to be rude or obnoxious. So it's that balancing act of wanting to be probing, but wanting to maintain your dignity and the dignity of the office. That's what I've struggled with him.
And have you been satisfied with him as president?
Yes, I have been satisfied with him.
Is this the guy that you believe that you supported and voted for?
If you were to ask me to walk back into that booth and recast my ballot, I wouldn't change it.
Let me get some callers in. Looks like we have Dave from media joining us on Radio Times. And Dave, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello to both. Michael, just wanted to call and tell you what an impact you've had on my life. I've listened to you, I think, as Sid would say, since the old joint. I, too, was a great fan of Bernie Herman, the whole gang over there. And unfortunately, I just will not be able to get satellite radio. And I've followed you for many years. And I really appreciated listening to you. Well, and hope someday I can get that. But
well, Dave,
just wanted to let you know.
Let me ask you, why don't you have a satellite radio? And I have to say that the Radio Times is also on satellite radio on the NPR channel. Come
well,
on, Dave.
I get to listen to you for free, and honestly, it's not in my budget, and my job, I'm in and out of my truck all day long so I can flip the radio on, and I really appreciated what you said about radio basically being wallpaper, but I do listen, and Michael is just a great guy to listen to, not just for the news and the political insight, but the entertainment, the have, you know, going between you and TC and I'm sorry, the other gentleman, I can't
Greg.
Think of his name, but you guys.
Thank you, David. That's awfully
thanks
nice.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Dave. Anything you want to add to that, Michael?
I have two people. It's a skeletal crew. They're terrific. My executive producer, Marty, I met because she was a Montessori teacher for our four children. And my wife and I used to say, boy, is she talented. And she then caught a media bug. She started selling candles on QVC. And I went to CBS and I said, this is the person I want to hire as my producer. There was another candidate who on paper looked exemplary. And I said, yeah, but he lacks personality. She'll be great. We can teach her all this stuff. She's been exceptional. And Greg has been with me for a number of years as well. Unfortunately, because he couldn't make the move to Washington, he's not joining us, and I will miss him.
Do you think it will be a different audience because it is a, as Dave, our caller, said, it is a paid audience?
It might be. Look, I don't know what to expect. I think this is going to be an evolution, and it's going to be a process that will take time like everything else in this industry. I don't expect to turn on the on-air button on Monday and all of a sudden have people waiting for me with bated breath. That's okay. It's a challenge of sorts, and I'm looking to rebuild.
Let's see what Mike from Yardley has to say. Michael, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Marty, and I wish you the best of luck, Mike. We're about the same age. I'm a lawyer. You're a lawyer. Hmm. I'm a liberal Democrat. You're a, I would consider a moderate Republican, and I've always considered you to be like my evil twin.
I think that's a compliment.
Yeah, it's sort of like David Brooks. You know, you always like to have a good enemy to test yourself against, and you're one of the people I consider has a very good opinion and helps me moderate mine.
So, Mike, are you the Paul Krugman and Michael Smirkanish is the David Brooks?
Yeah,
in your mind,
exactly. I love Dr. Krugman, and you know, he helps. I find I agree with him on virtually everything every time I read him. But my comment was that to mention someone I think both of you know and remember, Jim Greenwood.
Oh, sure.
And this Republican iteration of ideology, the way their party has worked, has made it impossible for a man like that to have a leadership position in Washington. And we've been successful here in this neck of the woods, the Democratic Party, because not because we're so much better, but because so many of my colleagues now in my party used to be Republicans.
Well, it's interesting, Mike. I appreciate
that. They've ceded that center territory to us, and we've gobbled it up, and we've been successful that way. Just look at Bucks and Montgomery County.
Well, I appreciate
that's what happened.
I appreciate that. I appreciate the call to Radio Times, but he raises Jim Greenwood was a moderate Republican representing most of Bucks County, little sliver, I think, of Montgomery County. It is interesting, Michael, to look at the suburbs and to see the purple haze, I guess.
People would say to me before the most recent election, who wins? And I said, if you could tell me what happens in the Philly burbs, I could give you your answer. And all you needed to do was look at the shaded map that ran in the Inquirer a day or two after the election and see exactly what transpired. And it was Obama. And the caller's right. And Jim Greenwood, Congressman Greenwood, a wonderful local embodiment of what I'm describing on a national level. George Herbert Walker Bush, for whom I once worked, couldn't get a nomination in the current party the way in which it's configured. And that ought to say something.
So you think of yourself as a moderate and independent. Those are the labels that you're comfortable with.
Marty, I'm for the death penalty. You know that I've been involved for many, many years in the Abu Jamal case. I'm a firearm owner. I thought we should have been in Pakistan long before we were in Iraq or Afghanistan. I could rattle off for you a number of things that you would say, well, gosh, this guy's a pretty conservative individual. I think pot should be legalized. I think prostitution should be legalized. I think that same-sex relationships are no more my business than my marriage should be anybody else's business. So it's a live and let live mentality that I have. Mostly conservative on social issues and liberal on, conservative on fiscal issues and liberal on social issues. And most of the people that I meet, when I am leading my life in the Philadelphia area where I've spent my entire 51 years, I meet people for whom the issues are a mixed bag. But turn on the radio, watch cable television news. A, they have it all figured out, and B, it's a completely doctrinaire view of the world. It reminds me of the pro wrestling that I grew up watching on UHF because it's all fake.
And that's Michael Smirkanish, our guest in this first 40 minutes of Radio Times during this hour. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. You mentioned Mumia Abu-Jamal, and I know that you wrote a book with Maureen Faulkner, Danny Faulkner's widow. And what I find so interesting and just confounding about that case is that you can go to, and I have been to Spain and to France and to Italy and to Eastern Europe, and you'll look out your window and there you see Free Mumia. Or you look at academics and you see how many academics are part of the Free Mumia crowd. What do you make of that?
I had those same experiences, and what I found is that, in my opinion, the further that you traveled from Philadelphia, less was the understanding of the true facts, and greater was the support for Abu Jamal. I never got that feeling here at home, and she's really an extraordinary individual. You know, they say Margaret Thatcher was the Iron Lady. Maureen Faulkner and her constitution are unparalleled by anybody I've ever met in my life. I didn't set out to write that book for her. I told her for years she needed to get it all down in print so that there would be an institutional memory of what she'd been through. And finally, we decided that we would collaborate on it, and I'm proud that we did it. The case continues to baffle me. I completely understand why, in the end, she decided to say to Seth Williams, the DA, okay, enough.
Let me get, looks like Jack from Egg Harbor to join us. Jack, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Michael, I'm traveling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina to Egg Harbor, and I'm almost at my destination.
Well, you better talk fast.
To the show. And here's my question. The opening, you talk about the audience you were looking for. I didn't hear you mention Hispanics, one of the largest growing minorities in the United States. And I wonder whether there's a way, and you're trying to open the tent up a bit to bring Hispanic folks into the talk radio network that you're going to be addressing. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jack. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. Michael, go ahead.
Well, I know by way of example, I'll talk about the Gang of Eight and this immigration reform movement that next week is going to be a very hot issue. I'll address issues that are of importance to hopefully all constituencies, but that constituency in particular. One thing I won't do is I will not alienate any particular group of listeners. I want them all to listen to me.
Where do you get your news?
Everywhere. I have, you know, we all have those staples that we look at. For me, it begins at the crack of dawn, and I would never look at Drudge without looking at Huffington Post. I wouldn't go to Fox unless I were looking at MSNBC. I like Newsworks. I think it's a really, I like what Jan Ting, great, I'll tell you somebody there, you know, there are some people that we all want to go and say, I wonder what so-and-so thinks. Professor Ting is a great example of what you offer on this website that I think is a very reasoned, intelligent point of view. Lots of newspapers. I might not touch them the way that I used to, but I sure do like reading them. And when I identify a story that's playing itself out in a particular community, then I want to know what's the newspaper of record in that town, and I'm going there. Great example, Sandusky case, you know, it became the Patriot News for me. I wanted to know what is Sarah Ganim writing in the Patriot News. She ultimately won a Pulitzer,
yes,
no surprise.
Did.
But that's how I try to go closer to the source.
Let me see what Corbett from Berwyn has to say. Corbett, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Michael, just wanted to wish you best of luck at POTUS. I have not been a listener of yours. I'm a mainline small businessman. I kind of describe myself as probably an old Rockefeller Republican. I think the last Republican president I voted for was H.W. Bush, who I thought was a great president. I've not been a listener of yours, but a regular reader of your Sunday Inquirer piece, and I look forward to having you on POTUS. I'd say I have three stations on my radio, HYY, KYW, and POTUS.
There
so,
you go.
Look forward to hearing you, and it's only going to be a competition on who what button gets pushed, I guess, these days.
You're nice to say that.
You are.
Stick with Marty. Stick with Marty,
you,
but
Michael.
Every once in a while, give me a little play. That's all.
Corbett, thanks for your call to Radio Times. Speaking of the Philadelphia Inquirer, and you're such a slacker, Michael, because here you've got the radio show, you fill in on MSNBC, you're an analyst there, you write an Inquirer column, you've also written a bunch of books as well. I mean, I work a lot of hours.
Four kids.
And four kids on top of that.
Yeah.
I work a lot of hours, but I think you probably work many more than I do.
I would complain if I weren't busy. And I appreciate the opportunity to have these different platforms. The Inquirer takes, you would know this, your listeners might not, much more time than people would believe. Goes into, they might not always look that way when you read them, but it takes a lot of effort in those columns. But there's something about expressing yourself in print that means a great deal to me, maybe because I've grown up loving newspapers and touching and feeling newspapers. But I'm fortunate that there are places where I can go and express myself.
You're a lawyer as well. Do you miss lawyering, or do you lawyer at all?
I don't. I'm affiliated with a great firm in town, Klein & Spector, but I, on a day-to-day basis, I've run out of time. So,
have you?
No. Yes.
And that would be the son of Arlen Specter,
it
yes?
would, and where the senator himself was affiliated before his passing.
Let me see what Al from Haverford has to say. Al, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. How
are
you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm fine. Mike, I kind of know you. Our kids go to the same school, but we'll go past that. We've had conversations before, and I just want to congratulate you for being the way you are over the years. And I've always listened to you. I kind of, when we started first listening to you, I didn't know where you were coming from, but listening to you, I can see the evolution, and I really enjoy your thinking. What I wanted to ask you specifically is, I think what's going on in Washington right now is the most dangerous I've ever seen. I'm a little older than you. I'm 58, and I can never remember the intransigence that I've seen in Washington on issues that you would never think there would be that much disagreement on.
You know,
I just never think.
You know, Al, I hate to do this to you only because I'm looking at the clock and we only have about a minute or two before we have to say goodbye to Michael Smirkanish, but I want to thank you for calling in, and Mike will give you a chance to weigh in on that.
I think
as well.
the polarization that exists today is the highest I've ever seen it. I've been paying attention for the last 35 years. The National Journal can document with statistics how they think it's the most polarized, and the causes, to me at least, are obvious. It's hyper-partisan congressional districts where you don't have to go home and face a constituency that wants to know, why didn't you compromise? It's closed primaries, like in a state like Pennsylvania, where I think everybody ought to vote in primaries. That would be to the benefit of the GOP. It's the role of money, and it's the role of the polarized media. That's created an environment where we just can't solve the big stuff. Look at what's going on with gun control in the aftermath of Sandy Hook. This is a Band-Aid that they're addressing, and they're congratulating.
Background checks.
Yeah, and not even full background checks. And they're congratulating one another without a vote yet having been taken, as if this is a milestone. It's really not.
But do you see your job then as depolarizing the environment or the political culture?
I see my job as letting people know that there are consequences with their choices, and if they are going to places for their news and information, and they are entertainment based, but they're treating them like they're legitimate debate, and they're making judgments as a result, it's a disservice to the country.
What do you do when you're not working?
Smoke and drink.
You smoke and drink?
Yeah.
I know you're a cigar smoker,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have certain well, smoking
I've been,
rituals
I have
or
been,
special
I've,
rooms
you
in
know
your
what?
House?
I've been binge-watching some TV series recently that people have always said to me, you have to watch this, you have to watch this. And I have been just Damages, House of Games, Breaking Bad, all over all of them.
All good stuff. Well,
yeah.
I wish you the best of luck.
Thanks
and
for saying
I thank
that.
You very much for joining us today on Radio Times. And again, Michael Smirkanish has been our guest. He is leaving his syndicated radio show, which is based here in Philadelphia. He's making the move to Sirius XM. In fact, on Monday, he'll be hosting a show on the POTUS channel. And as I said earlier, I guess we'll be in some degree of competition, but competition is good for all of us. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can see a picture of Michael Smirkanish and myself on our Facebook page. It's a very humid day. I have hair all over the place. He does not.
I have none.
He has none. Bill Adair waiting in the wings. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Pennsylvania Family Support Alliance supports WHYY. April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and Pennsylvania Family Support Alliance is offering information on how to protect kids at pa-fsa.org.
Supporting WHYY, Camp Hill Special School, with day and residential options, is a community committed to the care and education of children ages 4 through 21 with mild to severe intellectual disabilities. Dr. Dan Gottlieb makes a presentation at their Phoenixville campus on April 22nd, and the school hosts an open house at their Glenmore campus on April 27th. To register for the presentation on April 22nd and the open house on April 27th, and for more details, camphillspecialschool.org.
Hello, this is Ira Glass of This American Life, and I am coming to Philadelphia to do this show that I know sounds completely ridiculous, but I swear is pretty great. It's a collaboration between me and the Monica Bill Barnes Dance Company. So I tell stories, they dance, two art forms that have no business being on stage together, April 20th and 21st. We did 10 minutes of the show at Carnegie Hall and brought down the house. WHYY members get discounted tickets at whyy.org/events.
The Philadelphia Speaker Series supports WHYY, presented by Widener University, and continuing its sold-out season at the Kimmel Center on April 15th with Nando Parado, sponsored by WHYY and BNY Mellon Wealth Management.
I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Welcome back to Radio Times. Bill Adair, the founder and editor of PolitiFact, the Pulitzer Prize-winning fact-checking website, is leaving to take a job at Duke University. PolitiFact has been a go-to website where elected official statements have been put to the test through the site's Truth-O-Meter. We have called on Bill from time to time over the years, especially during campaign season, and we have invited him back as he makes his move to academia. And Bill Adair, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Thanks, Marty.
You're very welcome. So why are you leaving PolitiFact and making the move to a college campus?
Well, I'm leaving a great job for another great job. Editing PolitiFact and working for the Tampa Bay Times has been just a wonderful experience. I've been here 24 years, have been editing PolitiFact for the past six.
Wow.
And it's been great, and we've really had an opportunity to, I think, change the way that political campaigns and politics is covered. So that's been very fulfilling. Likewise, the opportunity at Duke is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be, the title is the Knight Professor of Computational Journalism, or actually Knight Chair of Computational Journalism, and to be one of the professors of the practice of journalism at Duke. And to have a perch to be able to do some research, some experimentation, and to try to create some other new things like we have done with PolitiFact, but to do it with the benefits of Duke and the tremendous resources that are available there. So I'm really excited about the opportunity, and I'm going to keep my hand in PolitiFact. I'm going to remain a contributing editor, and I'm overseeing our new venture in Australia. So I'm very excited about that.
And I have not ever heard of computational journalism.
Well, it's a phrase that has largely originated there at Duke from Jay Hamilton, who was a professor there, and some others who work there. And the idea is to basically use the power of computing to do better journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And as you probably know, and I'm sure your listeners know, you know, there's been a great growth in journalism in using data in the past 20 years, maybe 25 years. There's a group called NICAR that has done a lot of computer-assisted reporting, and what we're going to do at Duke is try to take that into the next decade by broadening the concept, and in addition to doing the traditional computer-assisted reporting projects that many people are familiar with, where we take large data sets and we use them to either inform our investigative reporting or to provide open databases for the public. I'd also like to explore ways that we can use public databases for ongoing journalistic projects like PolitiFact, where you're basically creating a new form of journalism, maybe a new form of narrative. Maybe there are ways to tell what governments are doing that are not the traditional news story. So I'm very excited about it. I think it's a great opportunity.
I'd like to go back even to review some of those 6 years where you were the editor at PolitiFact. And obviously the website was there to fact check what elected officials say. Do you think over those 6 years that elected officials, politicians, members of Congress, presidents, were more truthful because there was PolitiFact?
I think PolitiFact has clearly had a big impact in American politics, not PolitiFact alone, but along with factcheck.org, which is based there in Philadelphia, and fact-checking that's been done by other news organizations such as the Washington Post and the New York Times. I think we have really, I mean, I guess I remember framing it as message to politicians, there's a new sheriff in town. And I think many of them have realized that for the first time, journalists are really watching what they say. And there is lots of fact-checking at all levels throughout the United States, inspired by this great movement that really began with factcheck.org and Kathleen Hall Jameson and Brooks Jackson, and that we took in a slightly different direction with our Truth-O-Meter. And you know, people often say, well, fact-checking hasn't really worked because politicians are still lying. And I think that they're looking at it the wrong way. It's like the cop on the highway with the radar gun. You don't know how many people you have slowed down because you're there with the radar gun, you know? And so I really do think we have had a significant impact, and there have been plenty of anecdotes that we've heard from different politicians. Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat from Ohio, was quoted saying he had directed his staff to be much more careful about his facts. We heard stories during campaigns of meetings where the campaign people would get together, talk about a TV ad, and they would say, well, is that going to pass the Truth-O-Meter test? And so I really do think we've had a positive impact, and I think it is still very much in its infancy. You know, fact-checking in one form or another has only been around about 20 years, and the Truth-O-Meter has been around 6, and yet despite that, we have grown to now 10 states where we have PolitiFact, including your listeners in New Jersey benefit from PolitiFact New Jersey, which is a project of the Star-Ledger. And now we're about to expand to Australia, which will be our first international project.
Interesting. And that's Bill Adair, founder and editor of PolitiFact. He is taking a job at Duke University. He has spent a number of years as Washington bureau chief for the Tampa Bay Times. And as I said, someone we have called up from time to time, especially in the throes of a political campaign season, to talk about pants on fire and who and who's telling the truth or not. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I know, Bill, that Rachel Maddow became a kind of a critic of PolitiFact, calling it a disaster and an embarrassment, not agreeing with some of the analysis. But I also know that PolitiFact here, and I have the page, put Rachel Maddow to the test as well. Was this a sort of personal back and forth between the two of you?
Well, the chronology of that was actually the opposite. We put Rachel Maddow actually cited our work positively on our show several times, and then when we started expanding our fact checking to pundits and talk show hosts, we put her to the Truth-O-Meter and gave her a false rating that she disagreed with.
Yes.
After that, she began being very critical of our work. And, you know, the most important thing is we take our work very seriously, and when people criticize it, we look at their points and see if we believe they have merit, and if we've made a mistake, we'll correct it. And there were some things that Maddow had complained about and that her listeners had complained about where we actually had already altered our ratings. So it was almost like the segment was written and they went ahead with it anyway. But, you know, the other thing to remember is that American politics is so polarized these days, and that these cable news channels are really playing to such polarized audiences, and this is why I was glad to hear Michael mention this, that, you know, this is such a polarized time that I don't know that if you're playing the referee, as PolitiFact does, that you will ever make either side happy. You know, it's like if you're a Flyers fan, you just know that the refs are biased against the Flyers, you know? It's just a fact. And so I think that's the case if, whether you're a Fox News watcher or an MSNBC watcher, it's always easy to say the ref is biased. And, you know, we do our best. We have a very thorough methodology of going through things, and I think our record speaks for itself. But the reality is we're never going to keep the people who are really partisan. They'll never be happy all the time.
I know a lot of how much research goes into the kind of fact-checking that PolitiFact does and these other fact-check sites, and this is just a fantasy of mine. I probably said this to you before, Bill, which is I would just love to have you know, fact checking in real time, because oftentimes someone will say something that's either a lie or a distortion or misinformation, and then it takes 2 days to correct it, and you feel like after that 48 hours, that lie takes on a life of its own.
Well, we're getting closer to that, Marty, and I think this is something I definitely will pursue at Duke. The thing about falsehoods is in a campaign, of course, they repeat their lines, and so the statements that we're hearing today are probably statements they made a week or so earlier. And so we have, by virtue of the structure of our database at PolitiFact, the ability that when someone repeats a claim we've checked before, we can quickly tweet a link to the previous item and say, hey, we rated that pants on fire or whatever. And so I think we're getting closer. The amount of time it takes to fact check is probably always going to be about the same. I think the goal of instant fact checking is a hard one to achieve because good journalism takes a little bit of time. But using technology, we can pop up the truth-o-meter more quickly. And so at Duke, I'm going to be looking for ways, not necessarily just limited to PolitiFact, where we can provide real-time linkage to accountability journalism, and so that if you're watching a program on an internet-enabled television, it's conceivable when something gets said or a misleading campaign commercial is on that the fact-check information could pop up on your screen.
Oh, that's very cool.
And that's it would be wonderful if we can achieve that.
I would applaud that. Let me see what Ed from Westchester has to say. Ed, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, well, hi, Professor. Professor, I'm a senior citizen. I'm 75, and I'm just dying to do volunteer work to help out the country. And I was thinking, is it possible that someone in a journalistic department could set up internet courses for senior citizens to give them courses in journalism, and then they could become a cadre of volunteers who could just leverage fact-checking? Are there any programs like that existing, or do you see a good possibility for such a program?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Suggestion. I know of retirees who sort of live for the day when they're retired and then get there and realize, man, I still have so much I want to contribute. What can I do? And so I totally can see where you're coming from. I think that's a great idea. I don't know of any existing programs. The way that we benefit at PolitiFact is we hear from a lot of readers who will email us and say, hey, I watched this show and I saw this claim or whatever. Could you check it out? But it's a really interesting idea. I might suggest that to my colleagues here and see if there's a way to create a network of
volunteer
assistants, who could sort of watch the programs and look for things that were said, have sort of a crowdsourced what we create at PolitiFact, where we welcome suggestions from our readers, is the list of facts that we could check on any given day, because on any given day there are 20, 30 good factual claims that we could check, and we only have the staff to do three or so of those. So that's a great idea. Let me kick that around.
Ed, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let's see what Chris from Philadelphia has to say. Chris, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. How are you doing? I think you're doing wonderful work. I just, when I approach people and maybe provide them with your website to look at, some of them seem a little skeptical, and I'm just wondering, maybe to ease those worries, I'm just curious about where your funding comes from and how you might pull in revenue from the site itself.
We get revenue from the web advertising that you see on our site, and also from our media partnerships. So we have partnerships with the Hearst Television Network, or the Hearst Television Stations, which include 24 different markets around the country. We also get funding from our newspaper partners, papers like the Star-Ledger in New Jersey, the Plain Dealer in Ohio, that are licensed to do PolitiFact in those states. We also get funding from the sales of our mobile app, which I should put a plug in for, great iPhone app, PolitiFact Mobile, that costs just $1.99, no subscription fee, just lasts forever. And so you add all those things together, and about half of our money, give or take, comes from that revenue, and then the rest is comes from our parent company, the Tampa Bay Times, formerly the St. Petersburg Times, which is an independent and widely respected Pulitzer Prize-winning newspaper in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Chris, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Bill, are you going to miss the sort of day-to-day grind of journalism?
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to miss the grind. I'm going to miss the adrenaline rush that comes when you've got a great breaking news story, even a, you know, like an urgent fact check. But I still get to be involved. The great thing about being a contributing editor is that I'm going to get to keep my hand in it and do that from Duke. And, you know, I'm not leaving fact checking. I'm just taking a slightly different route now.
And do you have a professor that you would like to model yourself after? I don't think you've never taught before, have you?
I have taught a little bit as an adjunct faculty member at the Poynter Institute. My favorite professor, actually, I still stay in touch with, is now at the University of Richmond, Richard Dagger. And he was a professor of political philosophy, and he managed to make political philosophy really interesting and understandable. So he is my role model, and my favorite was his lecture, Finding Political Philosophy in the Songs of the Beach Boys. And so if I can have that same fun approach, I think I can get the students engaged.
Oh, I loved courses like that. Bill Adair, thank you so much, and good luck in your next adventure.
Thanks, Marty.
And that's Bill Adair, the founder, editor of the fact-checking website PolitiFact, won a Pulitzer Prize a couple of years ago. And as he told us, leaving PolitiFact, although just sort of downsizing his responsibilities there for a job at Duke University. Michael Smirkanish began our conversation, and he's making the switch from a terrestrial talk radio to satellite talk radio. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out about Facebook and Twitter, email, archives, podcasts, Sirius Satellite Radio. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.